Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. My co-host, Billy Sage, the laughter part, quite often, is not with us again today because of illness. So we wish Billy Sage well, and I am so pleased to have Joan Price back. She was our guest on July the 1st. So welcome back, Joan.
Hi, good to be here.
Thank you. And your first book was Better Than I Expected, Straight Talk About Sex After 60.
Better Than I Ever Expected.
That's
okay.
Of course, ever is important, too.
It is.
And your follow-up book is Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex. I was looking back at your first book, and on the back cover, Michael Castleman, who is a mutual friend of ours, he writes, "Hot sex is definitely not just for the young. With wit, wisdom, and encouragement, Better Than I Ever Expected proves that sex over 60 can be just that, better than women and men ever expected. This book will warm your heart, add spring to your step, and light a fire between your sheets."
Woo-hoo.
Nicely expressed, Michael Castleman.
Oh, Michael's the best.
I know. He really is. If any listeners want to hear my two shows with him, they can scroll back and listen on iTunes or whatever. So in your introduction to the Better Than I Ever Expected book, you said, "We're redefining aging and sexuality. We're the love generation. We practically invented sex." We're not about to shut the gates now. Indeed, Joan Price.
Indeed, Diana Wiley.
I mean, remember sex, drugs, and rock and roll? And I think that those of us over 60 don't want to go quietly into darkness of any sort.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Yes. So what's happened with your first book as a result of your second book coming out?
Well, it's fabulous, actually. What's happening is that people, with the publicity about Naked at Our Age, people are buying the first book, too, Better Than I Ever Expected. And
yes,
it's wonderful because they're really a team. Better Than I Ever Expected celebrates the joys of senior sex, and then Naked at Our Age addresses the problems and get solutions for the issues that my readers have written me about and talked to me about in the 5 years since Better came out.
And what, there were several things that inspired you to write Naked at Our Age. Can you just review some of those for us?
Yeah, well, the main one is that when I came out with this Hooray for Senior Sex book, people kept saying to me, "Well, la-di-da for you, but I'm not celebrating because my sex life isn't what I wanted at all."
Mm-hmm.
And so they told me their issues,
mm-hmm,
and I realized as I did my research trying to help them that the answers are out there, that they're not really mysteries, they're not unknowns, it's just they're not commonplace knowledge mainly because of the problems that I addressed in the first book, which is that people don't want to hear about senior sex, don't want to talk about senior sex, and certainly don't want to hear the seniors raving about it.
Well, in your book, your second book, you have lots of raves and inspiring stories.
Yes.
But, and then you said in the show we did July 1st that there is that ick factor, and for those who didn't hear that program, can you tell us about the ick factor?
Yes, the ick factor is what I call our society's aversion to hearing about seniors having sex with their wrinkly bodies, that
mm-hmm,
for some reason other cultures are different. It's our culture. It's a product of our upbringing that we think that sex is only for the young and firm of skin and butt and all that. And when actually we all have the power to enjoy sexuality agelessly, which is why I call myself an advocate for ageless sexuality.
Yes, and that's in your introduction in your first book, and I like your phrase, bodies beyond boundaries.
Yeah, and you know, the boundaries are partly the changes that we find, the physiological changes, the emotional changes, the relationship changes, but they're also the changes in our own mindset, where we stop giving ourselves permission to fully enjoy our bodies because we're so concerned about the changes and the wrinkles and the sags and that the knees hurt and so many things are happening that are, and I don't know about you, Diana, but I keep saying, I'm not ready. I'm not ready for my knees to hurt so I can't dance as much. I'm not ready for my neck to hurt so I have to tell people sitting directly across the table from me because I can't twist to look at you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready for any of that. And
well,
in the sexual realm, so many people who find these challenges of, say, vaginal dryness or erectile difficulties or decreased desire, some will say, I'm not ready, and they go after the answers. Others will say, oh, well, I guess that's the way it goes.
And they fold up their tents.
Yeah.
They fold up their tents and give up and miss out on so much possible joy. As long ago as, let's see, the early 90s, I did a second aging and sexuality study with Dr. Walter Bortz, and both studies were later published in medical journals. But we spoke to some 2,000 men, members of SERS, that's an acronym for Sons in Retirement, and the 2,000 were at luncheon meetings over the course of a year. There were usually about 100 at one time, you know, at a luncheon.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a pre-Viagra, and we gave questionnaires to all the guys, and we got back 1,200 of them, which was pretty amazing return on a study. But I remember one of the issues was a lot of guys were on high blood pressure medication, and they would say, well, my doctor says, would you rather die from a heart attack or have an erection? Once again, we get doctors minimizing the problem, discounting it, usually because they're not comfortable with their own sexuality. And maybe don't even have enough information.
Diana, I was giving a talk last week. I've been traveling promoting Naked at Our Age,
yes,
and having talks all over the
mm-hmm.
place.
Yeah.
And a woman said she was in her 70s,
mm-hmm.
and she hadn't had sex for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
She was not partnered, and
mm-hmm.
she had a cancer scare that resulted in a complete hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And she realized in thinking that maybe she was going to die and then realizing I'm going to live,
uh-huh,
that one
good.
Of the things she wanted to recapture in her life was her sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So she said to her doctor, what do I need to know about sex now? I mean, she had a hysterectomy. No one said
mm-hmm.
a word to her
mm-hmm.
about this.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, do you have a partner? And she said, no. And he said, well, then you don't have to worry about that, do you?
That's, you know, of course I hear similar stories all the time from my clients. I just saw a couple just before this show where when the husband was still in his 30s, he was diagnosed with very low testosterone, but his doctor didn't bother to tell him. No doctor bothered to follow up. His wife suffered for years. And finally, he went to a naturopath at my suggestion, and this was last year, and he uses a compounded testosterone cream. This is a man who's just turned 50, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
But he suffered for 20 years
uh-huh.
with erectile dysfunction, and nobody followed up with him to find out a solution. And a lot of times, finding a good naturopath who will talk to you and do the tests rather than a doctor who's maybe uptight himself or herself, is the way to go.
Well,
or shop around.
It isn't just a matter of them being uptight. The doctors don't get the kind of training.
No, I know.
That we mm-hmm. need them to have. And unless they've realized how important this is themselves and just gone out for the continuing ed, which is available to them, then they just don't know. They know nothing about sexuality for any age, and they know double nothing about our age.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I heard about another doctor who said, well, I can't talk to this 60-year-old woman about her sexuality because then she'll start to cry, and I'll go over the 7 minutes that I have allotted to her.
Oh.
I know.
The 7 minutes.
Well, you know, with insurance and all of that, what do they call it? Managed care.
Yeah.
That's overmanaged, I think.
Well, what I tell people to do is to address their doctors straight on.
Right.
And say, I have some questions about my sexuality now, and here's what I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's going on. Here's what I need to know. And if they experience anything less than a full solution, then they need to say, who can you refer me to who would know?
That's such a good suggestion, Joan. And I also suggest to my clients that they take on a 3x5 card all the questions they want to ask and not leave the doctor's office until they get some answers.
And take another person, too, because sometimes we don't hear what's being said to us.
And that's particularly true with when a man has been diagnosed with, say, prostate cancer, and we're going to talk about that later in the show, that when you are diagnosed with something really serious, you almost always have to have somebody else there.
Yeah.
Maybe even taking notes, and as you said.
I did that for Robert. I would sit in the oncologist's office, and I would just write things down.
Yes. For those of you listening who were not here on July 1st, Robert Rice was Joan's late husband, and they had quite an amazing love affair, and I think it was over a 7-year period.
Yes, exactly 7 years.
Yeah, and that was glorious for you.
Glorious.
That's some of what helped you be inspired to write the first book, and then after his death, you wrote the second book.
Well, it was absolutely what inspired me to write Better Than I Ever Expected, because our love affair was so fabulous and because no one was talking out loud and candidly and joyfully about senior sex.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert was fully supportive.
Mm-hmm.
He was wishing I would maybe not talk about him so much, but,
right.
But he was completely supportive of the need to talk out loud about this and the need to be authentic, which I know is a word we used in the first podcast that is so important to both of us.
Yes, it is. Authenticity usually implies better character, too.
Yes. And then I would get emails from people after Better Than I Ever Expected came out, and they would ask me questions about what was going on for them. And I'd sometimes call Robert over to my computer and say, listen to this. And I'd read the story that had just come in. And he would be so profoundly moved. He would say, oh, you've got to help him.
Right.
And I'd say, that's what I'm going to do. And because of it was like my work took a whole different turn, which went from just self-expression to genuinely finding answers for people and helping them resolve their problems. And he believed so much in what I did that he made me promise I would keep doing it after he died, once we knew he was dying. And it, so that, in a way, he also was the motivation to do Naked at Our Age.
And you dedicate the Naked at Our Age to the, I'm reading, to the memory of my beloved husband, Robert Rice. Although Robert died before this book could be written, it is as much his as mine. You honor me when you do your work, I hear his voice tell me. So, Robert, this book is for you.
Yes.
In your honor, with memories of our great love. That's beautiful, Joan.
Thank you. You're tearing up, too.
Yeah, I am.
This is good.
Well, as we discussed on July 1st, we have both lost husbands and that were very dear and with whom we had a passionate relationship. But so, of course, I can relate.
One of the things that keeps creeping into my blog, which is supposed to just be about sex and aging, is grief. That keeps creeping in. And the other day I wrote a new post about grief because a friend of mine had lost her husband. And she said, and although he only died a month ago, she said, I don't know how to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, don't say goodbye.
I don't.
And so I wrote a post about how I saw that. So nakedatourage.com, my blog, has a lot about sex and aging. It's mostly about sex and aging. But it's about the kinds of relationships we have that we have to adapt to. And part of that is loss.
Well, I was just going to say that when you talk about bodies, wrinkles, sags, not ready, oh, well, you have to make some adjustments. But essentially, when you begin to lose some function in your body, whether it's bad knees or whatever, that's about loss.
Yeah.
And so you have to grieve it, but make adjustments and persevere.
Yeah.
And be like Miriam in your book, and in your final chapter 20, and then you write Miriam, and she's 57. This is under your heading, Sex Plus Wisdom and Experience. And Miriam says, I love the casual pace of making love for 3 hours, the caressing, gazing, and excruciatingly arousing touch before and during orgasm. The older we get, the more of ourselves there is to give back and forth in those fabulous lovemaking sessions. This is so true. There's nothing to prove, just love given back and forth.
Isn't that true?
And just to finish up with skipping a little bit with Miriam, if only the younger generation knew this so that they could look forward to these fabulous sexual years in old age. I've often thought the same thing as I shared before. After 11 years of being a widow and being very picky, I'm very fortunate because I do have an amazingly good sexy man in my life now, and I count my blessings every day. Because when you know about loss, and then, you know, even after a very long period of practically all sexual drought, you know, you really can appreciate it when it reenters your life. But it takes some time. I mean, you did some very inventive things, like get an erotic massage, and I think it's so important to stay juicy between relationships. But you didn't even feel like doing any of that, at least for what, a year and a half.
Well, I did not. I totally lost my sex drive with my grief.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew, and I didn't even pay any attention to this for the first few months. But after that, I knew because of my world is sexuality and I know this stuff, that if I just let myself go as far as not self-pleasuring, not paying any attention to my sexuality, then I'm going to lose something that's going to be much, much more difficult to reclaim it later.
How wise of you.
Yeah,
very wise.
It's because of experts like you that I even know this.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm corresponding by email with a widow that I met at the Pines for Prostate fundraiser. But I'll save that for when we talk about cancer and sexuality. And by the way, listening audience, we're also going to talk about safer sex because, believe it or not, and it's hard for people who are, say, under 50 to believe this, but people over 50 are very much at risk. So we're going to talk about that, too, probably in the second half of the show.
Well, this is all going to be so good.
Well,
I do want to add something to the solo sex part.
Please do.
Some people my age, when I give my talks, they are shocked that I recommend sex toys with the enthusiasm that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people out there who may not be using sex toys, may think they're, I don't know, something they're not supposed to be doing, or why bother with something mechanical when it's all supposed to happen naturally, that sex toys can mean the difference between an orgasm and not.
Absolutely.
And that's at our age particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so important, and that's really how I got back into my sexuality during
mm-hmm.
my grief.
Mm-hmm.
Is I had, I really had basically no interest. But I knew from the kinds of things you've said that we talked about in the last podcast,
mm-hmm.
that if you don't feel the desire, go ahead and do the things that physiologically arouse you, and the desire will follow.
Yes.
And so I would just take one of my best sex toys and go ahead and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it would work.
Right.
And I would think, wow, this is amazing that this works. I felt like, oh, I'm still alive, which is something that I'm numb to. I felt numb about.
Yes.
And so bringing it up, you know, from the genitals up sort of really reinforced to me that, yes, I can find the resilience somewhere to reclaim my life. And so I started doing something which now just makes me laugh because it's so much fun, is I started reviewing sex toys from the senior perspective.
Oh, good, Joan.
And I do that on my blog. And,
mm-hmm.
and when I tell people in my talks that I do this,
mm-hmm.
they look at me like, what? What's the senior perspective? You turn it on, it either works or it doesn't, right? and no, it's more than that, because as an older person, I need it to be able to go for a long time without overheating or without turning itself off or running out of battery charge.
Right.
I also need the controls to be easy to use without having to fish out my reading glasses to figure it out.
Yeah.
I need to be able to hold it in the proper position
uh-huh.
without my arthritic wrist going numb.
Mm.
And there are so many things like that that from a senior perspective is not the same as from a younger perspective. And as far as I know, I'm the only one who reviews sex toys from that angle.
I have not heard of anyone else, and
no.
I think it's so important. I often tell, actually women of any age, but particularly women who are perimenopausal or postmenopausal, that it's important to use a dildo-like sex toy inside your vagina and bear down on it, do your Kegels on it, and that'll keep the walls of your vagina more supple and strong.
Right.
And sometimes you can use another smaller, like the Natural Contour Jolie, which is small enough that for women who have partners can be brought into intercourse, but to use that on the clitoris and have the larger one, like the Magnifique, the Natural Contour, is inside.
Yeah.
So that can be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And,
that's the thing about the arthritic wrist when you try to use two at a time.
Oh, yeah, okay. that's right. But
which I agree with. I mean, we do need the internal, we need the penetrative work for in order to be able to have penetrative sex later and also to keep those PC muscles really strong.
Yes, and our friend, Candida Royale, talks about that very thing in your book.
Yes, she does.
And you quote her, and I think it was rather brave of her to be so self-revealing because she hasn't been in a relationship for a couple of years, but she's keeping herself lively and juicy and working.
You know, that's what I love about the way people were so generous, both the readers and the experts,
mm-hmm.
about sharing their stories, that they were saying, too, if
mm-hmm.
not now, when will we talk out loud about this?
Yes.
And so if my personal experience can help other people, then I'm just going to share it. And I don't think anything bad happened to anyone from doing that.
No. I share quite a lot, but I have to be a little bit more careful because I see clients. I do lots of marital counseling. And mm-hmm. So I share a little bit, and I even self-disclose a little bit during my sessions, but I don't want to give all of the details because, you know, in psychoanalysis, which I do not do, but the Freudian idea that the therapist is really supposed, the psychotherapist is supposed to present a blank screen so that the patient can project all of their negative, maybe mother or father stuff onto the therapist. Well, that's not the style of therapy I do, but still, it may not be so helpful for me to share what a fabulous sex life I'm having with my clients when they're suffering so much.
That's right. Well, that's a whole different thing, yeah.
Yeah, it is. But I love that you're so honest and you allowed me to share for 2.5 pages, as we discussed on the 1st of July, about mismatched desire, really.
Yes.
And so I didn't have to be so personal there, but just give information that I knew about. So while we're in still talking about for the next couple of minutes before we change subjects after the break, your last chapter, Better Now Than Ever, The Joys of Older Age Sex, on page, I just love what Tina, I see you quote all of these experts. So Tina, I don't know her, but Tessina, PhD.
Yes, Tina Tessina.
Yeah. Tips for romancing your partner. And they're all good, and they all are relevant. Touch each other. Touch as much as possible. I give my clients quite often the Sensate Focus homework.
Yes.
Where there's lots of touching, caressing, and sensual massage. And this is during non-coital. That means no intercourse love play.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this technique was the Sensate Focus was first described by Masters and Johnson. And lots of sex therapists use it, taking turns being the giver and the receiver. And it often gets couples into much more touching and realizing that our bodies are all kinds. There are all kinds of possibilities between the top of our head to the bottom of our feet.
Right.
And too bad when people get stuck between the legs because there are all these other possibilities.
Yeah.
So, and then she says, change stress to silliness. Laugh frequently. You know about that. The playful stuff.
Oh, Robert and I had so many games. We just were so silly all the time. It was like we were finding childhood all over again.
Yes.
We played so well.
Yes.
And we did little things like we had this little 1-inch panda. It was a little toy, a little panda that had feet that closed tightly, or you could squeeze on the shoulders and they opened. And
oh.
So we would hide the panda on each other.
Uh-huh.
And we would have this ongoing game of whoever had the panda last hides it, and then the other person is going to have to find it. And this goes over a period of hours or days, depending on how well hidden it is. And so I would find the panda on a toothbrush, or Robert would find it on the coffee pot handle at first when we were being obvious, and then we'd get a little less obvious. We always wanted it found, so we never hit it forever. But we wanted the other person to come upon it not looking for it.
Yeah.
And so just little silly things like that we would do, just engaging each other in playfulness. And that was sexy to us.
Well, it is sexy. We remember Steve Allen, the comedian, and his son, Steve Allen Jr., is an MD and also a sex educator.
Oh.
And I've met him at several conferences, and he was interviewed for Longevity magazine in 1994. So I think the magazine doesn't exist anymore. But
I once wrote for it. Okay.
Did you?
Yeah, I was a freelance writer for many years.
Yes. Oh, great. Well, I love the magazine. I'm sorry it went under. But
it should come back again now. Now we're ready for it.
We're absolutely. So Steve Allen Jr. Said that the bedroom, which can often be a place of tension or performance anxiety, is such an ideal place for silliness. And
yes.
He points out that in Old English, silly it was saleg back then, but to be silly meant four things in Old English, and it was to be healthy and happy and prosperous and blessed.
There you go.
Yeah, so to be silly, of course, to be silly, you have to also really trust your partner. They laugh with you, not at you.
Yes.
But in fact, we know that couples that laugh together, laugh together. So,
you're saying something so important, to laugh with each other, not at each other.
Yes.
One thing that I bristle when I see couples who make fun of each other in public or who put each other down and they say, well, I'm just joking. And I think we need to do better than that.
We certainly do. But at the moment, what we need to do is go to a break. So we'll
good
be back.
For you.
And we'll finish up a little bit on the Better Now Than Ever chapter. And then we'll talk about safer sex. By the way, if any of you are younger listeners, and there are probably quite a few, safer sex at any age, and then we'll also talk about sexuality and cancer, something that's not talked about very much. So stay with us, please, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, and I am a vegan. No, I am not an alien from planet Vega. I simply choose to eat plant-based foods. Join me on Ask a Vegan every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be talking about everything from soup to nuts. Plant-based foods are the healthiest foods to eat, as well as being the most economical, the most compassionate, and the least destructive. If you want to know more about the healthy, planet-friendly, plant-based diet, call in with your questions. Or call in and share your favorite vegan recipes. Tune in on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on www.progressiveradionetwork.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
This is Adam Coulter with Brooklyn Jazz Underground Radio. We'll be here every Tuesday from 5 to 6 with great music, interviews, and live performances. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. Again, that's Tuesdays from 5 to 6, or you can listen anytime at the archives at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
I'm so excited to be on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I'll be able to talk to you live, answer your questions, and work with you for your own patient rights. Tune in every Sunday at 5 p.m. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. See you on Sunday, 5 p.m.
That was a progressive moment. You know you can't have just one, only on the Progressive Radio Network.
So we're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley here once again with Joan Price, the author of Better Than I Ever Expected, and the second book, Naked at Our Age. And we were talking just before the break about advice, tips for romancing your partner. And I thought just another two before we go to safer sex and before we go to sex and cancer. I really like this one suggestion. Ramp up the sweetness. Married life has its unavoidable stresses. Add a spritz of sweetness frequently. Thank yous and gestures of politeness and affection are the WD-40 of your marriage, especially when things get strained. But the main source of sweetness, be the main source of sweetness for each other. So many couples forget to do this. They start taking each other for granted, and that's really too bad.
Oh, you're right.
And it's easy to do that in the beginning, but I have an exercise that I do often with couples, and it's called Sweet Nothings, where they face each other on my therapeutic couch, and we meet a knee, holding hands, making eye contact. Oh, and the eye contact is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And then they each spend a minute or a minute and a half or maybe 2 minutes taking turns saying what they really appreciate and value about the other.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I had a couple just a few days ago where the man, not the woman, started to cry during it.
Mm.
And so sometimes we're in great need of hearing these sweet nothings. And, yeah.
They should be called sweet everythings.
Oh, that's lovely. Sweet, I'm going to make a note of that. Sweet okay. Everything. So I'm going to reframe that. That's good. That's very good. So because women will say, especially women, make love to me in my ear. I really need to hear the words.
Yes. They want oral sex, A-U-R-A-L.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. And so there's a lot that, you know, we want to encourage people really of any age because it'll if you're a younger person, you might get this book, Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex. And I'm getting a call interrupt, which, of course, I'll let go. So what we need to do is maybe read, get informed, and then if you feel comfortable enough, if you're a younger person, give it to your parents.
Perfect.
I bet. Do you ever have younger people writing you on your blog?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Frequently, not as many as the older people,
no.
But I get occasionally. I get enough so that it isn't a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And they sometimes say they just want to know what to expect later,
mm-hmm.
Or sometimes they start out with a professional interest. Maybe they do massage, or they're a therapist, or
yes,
or they sell sex toys, or who knows what that
right.
Puts them in contact with older people who are dealing with sexual issues,
mm-hmm.
and they stay a while, and they go, wow, I'm learning some things that will be helpful in my life too.
Mm-hmm. So good. So let's. I don't know how to do a really good segue, except that safe sex is for all ages or people who are sexually active. And the AARP, the magazine, had a whole article about the problem of HIV/AIDS among people over 70. And I thought it was a very interesting article. I'd heard at previous conferences that this is more of a problem than most people will even talk about.
Yeah.
And so you have as one of your headings in your book, why aren't we practicing safe sex? How come older folks aren't?
Yeah.
So why are we not?
Well, there are a couple of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they'll give lots of excuses.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it comes down to these basic reasons. One is that in our history, we were maybe in a long-term relationship. We're out of it because of divorce or death. We're dating other people in the same situation. And we think, well, this kindly-looking person of my age can't possibly be a health risk. I mean, he's just had the same experience as I've had. But that's one reason. Another is that we feel embarrassed about asking for that. We think, women think, he's going to think I'm a slut if I insist on condoms or if I have them handy. The man is saying, well, I have enough trouble keeping my erection without the challenge of having to stay hard while putting on a condom so they don't have to use it, so much the better. And what they're not looking at is that, and this is something I'll tell people, you are not just going to bed with that one person. You are going to bed with everyone that he or she has had unprotected sex with, and every person that that person has had unprotected sex with, and so on. And do you really want to have unprotected sex with all these people you don't even know?
That's such a good thing to say.
Because if, let's say, and I'll just use he, although it can go either way, if he is saying, I want to have sex with you without a condom, then that's what he said to the last person and the person before that, mm-hmm. and those partners who were willing with other people too. And it's not even a matter of saying, well, show me your health history or show me your HIV negative papers,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
people sometimes say, well, you know, he showed me his test results from a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so we're looking at where he was really a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because the test results can only be certain up to 6 months before the testing, not
mm-hmm,
current.
Mm-hmm.
And this could have changed last night or last year or last week.
Indeed. And one of the more alarming sentences in this AARP article is, infected people don't always protect others. In a study of older HIV-positive people in New York City, 1 in 3 sexually active subjects had recently had risky sex.
Yeah.
1 in 3.
Isn't that just unconscionable?
It's unconscionable. And in your book, you talk about the condom conversation.
Yeah.
I love the last one where you had a former lover, I guess, who said, how many of these do you think we'll need tonight?
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes,
I mean, talk
that.
About a sexy way to bring it up.
I know. What are some maybe other ways that maybe have, well, they may not be quite as sexy or humorous, but they're direct. What are some other condom conversations you can have?
Well, you can say, I always assume we're using condoms, so which kind do you like?
Mm-hmm.
Or even just my condoms are yours.
Right. That's good.
You want to normalize it. Make it seem as if this is just the way we do things.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe, if we're really lucky, it will become the way we do things.
Yes,
but
yes.
But not to make a big deal about it, tittering about, well, I know you're safe. Of course you're safe, but, you know, I'm just going to do this anyway. No. at one of my talks, there was a man who was probably late 70s,
mm-hmm.
and he said that he had lost his wife mm-hmm. and didn't date for a long time. He said, all I did was sleep, wake, and drink,
mm-hmm.
how he
mm-hmm.
put it. And he said, and then finally he happened to meet someone and started dating her. And when it got to the point of seeming like it would get to sex, he brought up the subject of condoms. And the way he brought it up, he told me, was he said, so I've been hearing how seniors are much more at risk for STDs now than we realized, and so we should think about using condoms. And she said to him, oh, those doctors don't know anything. I'm HIV positive, and I had unprotected sex with my husband for decades, and he never got it.
That's pretty shocking.
Isn't that shocking? And
well,
he
I mean,
said after that,
statistically,
he said,
you don't always get it when you're exposed. But,
well, the point
but
is
still.
She knew she was HIV positive.
Yes,
and
my goodness.
And she's saying to him, no, we don't need to use anything.
Yeah,
doctors
well.
Don't know a thing. And then he finished his story by saying, you know the expression scared stiff? Well, I was the opposite. Scared limp.
At least he had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he wasn't eager to bed that lady.
No.
No. And then you talk about eroticizing condoms, which I've talked about with my clients, because certainly if a man can masturbate using a condom, not only will it help eroticize the condom, but it might give, if he has issues with ED, it might give him a little more confidence.
Right. And I learned that from one of my storytellers in the book, where this is a man in his 60s who has multiple partners and wants to have multiple partners. He has a very zesty sex life, and he uses condoms with everyone every time. It doesn't matter if he's been dating someone 5 years or 5 minutes. It's going to be condoms with everyone.
And that's in your book. Tingy,
yes,
he uses that name.
That's right.
In
the book, and he masturbates with condoms on in order to eroticize condom use.
Yes.
And I think that's a wonderful idea.
I agree. And he writes in your book, quoting him, "I'm not worried about catching something from you," he says to a woman. "I'm sure you're quite healthy. I'm worried about giving something to you." So he kind of turns it around.
Yes.
And his policy for 3 decades, every time, everyone.
Yes.
So it's kept, and he still gets tested every few months, and he's never had a problem.
Right.
And he's a smart guy.
He's a very smart guy.
And it sounds like he's also having a pretty good time.
Yeah.
Well, he's in the swinging community, isn't he?
Yes.
And he's bisexual, so it's important for him to use the barrier method. So, let's see, before we run out of time, my goodness, Jess, people listening, you can see that there's just a wealth of information in Joan Price's books, and so I'm hoping you'll want to go to, would you please give the two places where they can go and get more information and even buy your books?
Sure. My website is joanprice.com. JoanPrice, just how it sounds. And my blog, the shortcut to it, is nakedatourage.com. So you can go to either places or both, and you can get to one from the other, too.
Yes. And I haven't said this because my co-host Billy Sage usually does it, but we're almost to the top of the hour in the end. But if anyone has a question for Joan, you may call in 888-874-4888, and you can still get in with a question. So let's use the last few minutes to talk about Reclaiming Sexuality After Cancer, and this is your chapter 12. And you start that chapter with a rather, well, for me, kind of shocking story about when Robert was recovering from his chemotherapy and the packet of information that he got, and what happened there.
Well, he had undergone 6 months of chemotherapy, 5 days a week, and as you can understand, he was feeling quite sick and fatigued and nauseated, and it wasn't that he had a sex drive, but he wanted to have sex with the wife he loved, because it was a way of reclaiming his body, of which had just been a pincushion for poison he had seen it as.
Sure.
And he wanted to enjoy it again. He wanted to enjoy his physicality and to be active, proactive in reclaiming his life and his love, and so he wanted to have sex with me.
Mm-hmm.
We could not find any information in the huge packet that he was given about when it might be safe for us to have sex, because what we were concerned with is the chemotherapy from his body coming through his ejaculate into my body.
Yes.
And we didn't know, would this harm me? Is it minuscule in that way? We didn't know. We couldn't find anything. And so he phoned the center and asked for that information, and they were shocked that he was asking. Why would you want to know that, for heaven's sakes? But they said, we'll find that out, and they called back, and they said, it should be fine if you wait 2 weeks from your last chemo. And I want to say for readers who might have the same question,
yes,
it depends on the exact drugs and dosage that people were given, that the 2 weeks for us doesn't mean it's 2 weeks for everybody.
Right.
So ask your doctor about that. Let them know you want to know that, too. But wasn't that shocking that they didn't just automatically include that information?
Of course, but it's, well, it's not, it's shocking, but it's not surprising.
Yes, I get it.
Because, but I wanted to go back to Robert's wanting to reclaim his body. I think so many older folks that are having really good sex, that's when they feel most alive.
That's right.
And most rejuvenated. And, of course, we know that having sex and having orgasms is so good for our bodies.
And it was a spiritual experience for him, too.
Yes.
And a way to really escape the horrors of what he had had to go through.
Yeah. Oh, it's so sad that he had to suffer like that.
Yes.
But then you did start having sex again.
We
and
had
that
2 years of health.
Yes.
So bless the medical profession for knowing how to treat him.
Yes, that's right. And he might not have had those two years without the chemo.
He would not have, because he was in very bad shape when they decided he needed it.
Wow. So no matter what kind of cancer, there may be for a man erectile dysfunction going on. There's certainly going to be, well, not certainly, but often pain and fatigue. And a lot of times it's the woman, it's the female, the woman who worries, is it going to be okay? Will I hurt him? All of
yeah,
these things.
And if he doesn't have an erection, will I just seem to be teasing him if I try to figure out what kind of sex we can have together? That's something I hear from people in my audiences sometimes.
Yes.
And they just don't know that. It's hard to talk about. It's hard for the man to talk about. It's hard for the woman to talk about.
Right. And they may not know that the man can still have an orgasm with a flaccid penis.
Mm-hmm.
So the woman performing fellatio can be a great joy for him, and he can reach orgasm.
Yeah.
And it may, you know, his penis may not be firm enough for penetration, but it certainly can receive oral sex. So that's all very good.
For the people whose jaws are dropping right now, realize that orgasm and ejaculation are not the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll talk a little bit more about that.
If he doesn't have a firm penis, he's not going to ejaculate.
Mm-hmm.
And many men cannot ejaculate after, say, prostate surgery or other issues.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean he won't have that feeling, that physical feeling of orgasm, and that's quite remarkable.
Of release and all the good endorphins and perhaps oxytocin that will flood the body with that. You have one expert who says there may be difficulties getting stimulated or aroused, so you need to take more time. Most people need to take more time, actually.
Yeah.
And she writes, instead of the physiological response coming first and driving the emotional response, it may need to be the other way around, a mind thing first.
Yes.
So going back to sensei focus, just touching, paying attention, being mindful, surrendering to the moment. I talk about monkeys out on the branch making a lot of noise and distracting. And once you quiet down the monkeys, just focus in. It can be essential for really good sex. So focus on the touch, the sensation, the pleasurable feelings. And using sex toys on the man, too, can be useful sometimes.
Yes, it can. And, in fact, Charlie Glickman wrote a marvelous piece in Naked RH about sex toys for men.
Yes, yes, he did.
With information I hadn't known.
Uh-huh. What had you not known until he wrote about it?
Well, for example, that a cock ring can help hold an erection.
Oh, yes, yes. And sometimes using a small vibrator also on the scrotum or on the underside of the penis or the frenulum at the underside of the tip of the penis can feel really good. But not all men will like it, so you have to do a little experimenting.
Yeah. One way to experiment without it being too scary is to put the vibrator on your hand and use your hand on your partner.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then your hand will slightly transmit some of the vibrations, but it'll be light and it'll be obviously your hand.
Right.
And then that's not such a shock, like, ah, what is that?
Yeah.
You'll like a shock, actually.
Yes. That's an excellent idea. So in this same chapter about cancer and sexuality, you have a section, the importance of talking, and of course that's so important all the time. I think I said this even on July 1st, maybe not, but I've said it before anyway, that so often a couple comes in and what they have is not so much a sex problem, but a communication problem.
Yeah.
And it's so hard for some people to talk, and particularly when one person has been diagnosed with perhaps a life-threatening disease. But it's essential.
It is.
And then you talk about how it may help for the partner to go to the doctor's office to take notes, because the doctor may be in shock. I mean, the patient may be in shock. Also, a sex therapist can help identify some of these obstacles if the couple just can't move forward. The widow that I met at this Pines for Prostates fundraiser last month here in Seattle is just this lovely woman, and she's been a widow. Her husband died about 6 years ago, and I got her in a corner of this fundraiser, and she said, I've been celibate, and I'm thinking I might want to have a relationship with somebody finally again, but I was also celibate for a few years before my husband died, and so then I gave her the sex toy lecture, and she's so grateful because she's already started on using some of the sex toys, and she says, thank you for giving me permission to get back my body and my sensuality and my sexuality.
Exactly.
And, she's a woman of 60.
Mm-hmm.
But it puts a little prance in her step. Just as it did for you.
A little dance in her prance.
Yeah. A dance in her prance. You have done so much good work and continue to for seniors, but I think for all people.
Thank you.
But the seniors really need to get the message. Why don't you close off the show with something that you'd really like to, the message that you'd really like to say, which might be even a summary of what we've talked about today.
Okay. Well, my biggest message is not to give up. If you have problems with enjoying your sexual self, find out more, as much as you can, about what's going on, why you're having that problem, how to fix it. But for goodness sake, realize there are plenty of sensual and sexual things you can do that will bring a smile to your face, a glow to your cheek, and a prance to your dance, or a dance to your prance.
I love that phrase. That's a good
job. Yeah. and just not to take any milestone, whether it's physical or chronological, as a reason for giving up on sex, because sex can be ageless, and it's an entitlement.
It's an entitlement, yes. I tell some of my female clients that they have to really believe that they're entitled to pleasure.
You know? Yeah.
Even, because some people even have that idea, I'm not entitled to pleasure. Well, Joan, we will have you back because you're a very informed and delightful guest, and I encourage people to go to joanprice.com for more information and get her book, particularly if you're over 50. Her books, plural. So, Joan, thank you for a delightful interview today.
Thank you, Diana.
And again, we'll have you back. Bye-bye, everybody.